Blog Talk Radio.
Blessings and greetings, greetings and blessings, blessed souls. We're live because we're married to stay alive in this most existential moment with the intent of being configured to Torah Chaim, instructions of life, Torah Chesed, instructions of kindness, Torah Rachman, instructions of mercies. You now tune into Blog Talk Radio, and we humbly assert this is a higher inner frequency of Blog Talk Radio. We call ourselves Soul Class. This happens to be Soul Class number 746, A New Seam on the Rise, Part 29. Blessed is our eternal creator, Baruch Hashem, Shalom, peace, and bracha, blessing upon the entire human family experience. With Creator's help, our next program is taking place right now on March 8th, 2020, a year that should be filled still with good and plenty, starting at 6 p.m. Holy Land time of the land of Israel, corresponding to now 12:01 live from Turtle Island, Kesakon Heights, Kesapiska, a.k.a. USA Unified Soul Actualization. Today's program content will focus on being in discussion with Ezra Lanusi, Israeli Amuta CEO, Yafa Bati DaCosta, who will share with us thoughts about what has been accomplished so far during 2020. May Creator transform the remaining of this year into universal good and healings for all members of the human family experience, and how this connects with her international organization, Ezra Lanusi. To further interact with Yafa Bati DaCosta, you can contact her via her email, which we'll mention at the end of today's program, Bezat Hashem, with the help of the Most High, yaffbatya@yahoo.com. To participate and merely listen to the program live, you can also hear the archive version. That's your option. The call number is 347-838-8669. In the meantime, may the Eternal Creator bless and protect you and your loved ones. And we've been listening to a happy niggun because we're in the happy month of Adar. Even though the world has a lot of worries on its mind, this is called Klezmer Music. And this is from an album called Klezmer, Clarinet, and Violin, Best Jewish Music. And here's the best CEO of Israel, I didn't drink enough coffee, of the Ezra Lanusi. Yafa Bati DaCosta. I had to take the cobwebs out of my mouth, Yafa Bati, but hopefully the rest of the show will be cobweb-free.
Well, we can always hope, Don. Thank you for bringing me on your show again. I love being on your show. How have you been? It's been a couple of months. What's going on?
Well, we moved. We moved to what I call now the Golan Heights section of Crown Heights. We moved about 0.3 miles away from where we previously, but it's actually on a higher elevated plane in this little hamlet of Crown Heights. And it's actually more multicultural. In fact, my upstairs neighbors is a nice family from Yemen. So we see Arabs and Jews can live peacefully together, and we do get along. And my upstairs neighbor, Hazam, is a local store owner of two stores on the corner of my block. And being that there's a greater cultural mix, I humbly insist that we're kind of like ambassadors here on this part of Crown Heights, interacting with individuals that we were interacting with, but on a less frequent basis, about five blocks down from where we previously lived. And there was a problem setting up the internet. That's why there was this two-month hiatus breakage in doing these humble productions, because my previous internet system told me that in order to set up the internet, I had to get permission from 10 apartments, which was not a tenable situation. So we hooked up with Verizon, and hopefully this will take us to the next horizon. And part of going to the next horizon is talking with you, because I'm realizing you have what to share on today's program.
Okay, great. Well, I'm glad you had a happy move. And now we're in Adar, which is a very happy month, in spite of what's going on, by the way, because everything that's happening is coming from Hashem. So we should be very happy, because He always does things for us, for the Jews. And we can still be happy in Adar because of what's going on, because according to quite a few of the rabbis, as you probably know, we're getting closer and closer to the Geulah, to the final and complete redemption all the time, including what's going on right now.
Yes. And I'd like to segue into this piece of Torah from the Gate of Trust, Shara Bitachon, by the famous Rabbi Rabbeinu Bachya Ibn Bakuda, who lived in the 11th century, who was from Spain. And I think this will be a great way to segue into your presentation today, Yafa Bartil, about what's been developing within your organization internationally and in the land of Israel. It goes like this.
Okay.
The alchemist must perform certain operations and procedures without which he cannot accomplish his purpose. And in fact, it's kind of a dangerous profession. The alchemist can actually die as a result of the odors and fumes from the chemicals that the alchemist is accustomed to use to transform, for instance, silver into gold. Along with the incessant labor and the hard toil, which is day and by night. However, one who trusts in Hashem and God is safe from harm and can rest assured that no evil will befall him or her. Whatever comes to him or her from God brings him or her joy and gladness. He obtains his livelihood with peace of mind, calm, and tranquility. As written, quote from King David, "He makes me lay down in green pastures. He guides me beside calm waters." Now, the idea from the idea of being safe and can rest assuredly or be rest assured, there's a commentary called Paslechem, mentions that there are people who, although they are content about their present situation, are worried about the future. They worry that their fortune may change, God forbid. The human being who places his or her trust in God is not only certain about his or her safety in his or her current situation, but he or she is also certain and assured about his or her future. And concluding in this section, where Rabbeinu Bachya mentions, whatever comes to him or her from Hashem brings him or her to joy and gladness, even if something seems to be a calamity, the person who trusts in God will be joyous and happy. The man or woman of trust knows that a challenging situation merely seems externally as a difficult situation, but inherently it is good. So here we are, Yafi Batya, a great sage of Israel from 900 years ago, talking about the current world situation. One more proof, as if we needed any more proofs, which we really don't, about the truth of Torah. Your comment is matters, and please tell us what's been going on with your organization.
Okay. Well, we've been doing a lot, especially since last year, the end of last year, when we were meeting with various people here in Israel talking about the banana theme worldwide. They're very, very impressed here with what we've been able to do with a volunteer organization, all volunteers, no one on salary, no one making any money from what they do. Of course, everyone works, you know, to support themselves and their families. And they, in their discretionary time, we call it, is when they spend time to do work to help the banana theme in whatever capacity, okay? But the really exciting thing that's going on right now is we have a new section on our website called endorsements. And what's happening is people are writing endorsement letters for us and for what we're doing. So, for example, I met last year with Rabbi Samuel Kassin in the Old City of Jerusalem. He is the dean or the Rosh Yeshiva of a Sephardic yeshiva. It's called Shehebar Sephardic Center in the Old City. They train people to be rabbis, to be Sephardi rabbis, and they go out all over the world. And he gave me a verbal endorsement for what we do, what we've been doing, you know, to help people. And he was going to put it in writing, and he told me, you know, he would put it in writing. But I don't know what happened, emails, this and that, whatever. It didn't come through. So finally, a couple of weeks ago, I got his letter. What a beautiful letter he wrote. So that's up on our website right now in a new section called Endorsements. And then a man that I've been getting to know, Danny Lamour, who works with the Ministry of Diaspora Affairs here in Israel, he did a mapping project of what they call emerging communities. And he was traveling all over, especially in Latin America, and he went to Mexico and various places, to meet with some of these communities, these what are called emerging communities of B'nai Anusim, and get to know a little bit more about them and their numbers, you know, how big they are, and how long they've been doing this, and whatever information that he wanted to gather for the Ministry of Diaspora Affairs. He wrote me a beautiful letter. And then I have a new letter that came out this week from a rabbi friend that I've been working with. He lives in Miami now. He was living in Israel. He's a Breslover rabbi, and he's the one that I've been working with for the people in Cuba. And he wrote a gorgeous letter about our help and support to people in Cuba. So that's one of the things that's going right now is going on is that people are writing these letters because, why? Because we put on retainer a company in Israel here. They are a company headquartered in Beersheba, and they do fundraising. They call it resource development, but the resource that they're trying to develop is financial resources. So we have them on retainer, and they've been working to raise money for us for what we do. Actually, they've raised already $5,000 for the people in Mexico that we work with. Okay.
Beautiful.
And they already have books for the children in the school. They have a book in Spanish on the observance of Shabbat, okay, the kinds of things you can't do on Shabbat, the 39 categories of labor, okay, all in Spanish with beautiful photos and all this stuff. It's for the whole family. So each of the families that are involved right now with the rabbis got one of those books, and they're, I think this week they're getting their Talit Katan. So there are certain things that we're buying for them that they need, you know, in their process. And that was raised by this company. Well, the consultants at this company said, you know, Yaffa, it would really help us as we're talking to people, potential donors, and sending them to your website if your website had, you know, a list of donor endorsements and or endorsements from people who know you and the work that you're doing and your group is doing. So that's why it's so important that we have these letters. We're probably going to have, by the time we're finished, maybe about 8, 9, or 10 letters or so. There are a bunch of people working on them right now.
Beautiful.
We have 2 published and a third one going to be put on the website this week. So we probably have about maybe 5 or 6 more to go. But it's really fun talking to people about all this, and they go, oh, yeah, of course I would love to write you a letter. It's really great.
Beautiful.
They're very, very sweet.
So I'm looking at the – I just took a very, very superficial glance of endorsement with Rabbi Kasson and Mr. Littmore, and I want to cut and paste the homepage to your wonderful website. That is BNEIANOUSIM.org, and I want to connect it to today's broadcast so people can see for themselves that this is something that they should be connecting to. So that's just something as we're doing the program. That's wonderful, Ifabatia. And you know, I don't want to go into the negative, but in Yerushalayim, where you are, I understand, what has been the reaction to, number one, say, like the situation with this coronavirus and also the elections? I don't want to get too political either, but, I mean, it's a third election, and yet are things going to get settled, or is it going to take a fourth election? I mean, it seems like Hashem is putting everything on hold right now.
Well, exactly. So let's deal with the election first, because I think it's really very simple, should say, to deal with what's going on politically in Israel. The country is very, very much divided, similar to how divided the United States is right now politically.
Oh, yeah.
There's a very similar thing going on, okay?
Yes.
So you have a lot of people in the United States for the Democratic candidate, whoever that candidate's going to be, because we don't know yet.
Right.
Opposing, you know, the current president, President Trump. And between the polls and the news and the media, against the rallies, you know, how many people come out for the rallies for President Trump. versus the polls and the media claiming, you know, the Democrats are, you know, going to win the next election. You've got a very divided situation in the United States. It won't, the Democratic process in the United States is such that you cannot have an election where there's a tie, where nobody
right.
wins. But in Israel, that's what we've got, okay? Because in Israel, there's very much this divide between what's called the left, with the left major party, which is called Blue and White, and then you have the Likud, the major party on the right, which is more conservative. That's the conservative party, okay? And there's very much a division. So it may go to a fourth election, but now we've also got this other thing coming into the mix of the situation called the coronavirus. Interesting,
yes.
By the way, corona means crown.
That's right.
Okay? So it's the crown virus. And as some of the rabbis are saying, people have to understand, especially us Jews, have to understand that everything comes from Hashem, including
yes.
this virus. And some of them are getting very, very, I'll call it, clear, straight, and direct, that Hashem is going to use this to clean house. Now, just look at where it came from, which was China, and the kinds of things that go on in China. For example, in China, I don't know how many people do this, but there are people that eat animals live, while they're alive.
Yes, that's right.
And that's a violation of one of the laws of Noah, which
yes.
is the moral code that was given to all mankind, not just
yes.
Jewish people. And so that, I'm sure, doesn't please Hashem at all. And then what's another major country that has this outbreak? You know, so many people have it and so many people, you know, have died from it already, is Italy. And
yes.
what does Italy represent? Or think of the major city in Italy, Rome. And what
Rome,
does
yeah.
Rome represent? The Catholic Church. And what
right.
is it that Hashem isn't happy about with the Catholic Church? The persecution of the Jews. Okay? Then you have, which is historical, but there has to be an accounting for that at some point, of what happened with the Inquisitions and the fact that they didn't fight the Nazis during the Shoah, Pope Pius XII, they're even putting him up for sainthood. There's so much going on with,
right.
with that whole scene.
Yes.
Then you hear about all of the people who have come down with this virus in Iran and died from it, including a parliamentarian, someone very close to the main leader in Iran.
Right.
And you think, well, wait a minute, Iran keeps saying they're going to wipe Israel off the map and all this other stuff. There's concern about them developing a nuclear bomb and all of this. And economically, they were already doing poorly because
right.
of the sanctions the U.S. had put on them. Okay, now they're doing even more poorly because of the concerns about the virus, and they do have a lot of people infected. As a matter of fact, two things going on. They have a lot of people infected, but there's also a lot of suspicion that they are underreporting how many people are being infected. And they're
yes.
not really doing things to contain it and teaching people about washing hands and other things that people need to do in order to try to prevent them from contracting it. So they're kind of like playing ostrich about it with the head stuck in the sand, okay? It could be really, really devastating in Iran. It's in the city of
yes.
Qom, okay, where the burial place is for Esther and Mordecai. I'm sure we'll talk about Purim a little bit later.
Yes,
that's
yes.
where the kever is for Esther and Mordecai. And it's in Tehran, which is the seat of the government.
Right.
So, I mean, so many things are going on in the world right now, Dawn, where if people are awoke or awake, depending on how you like to say that word,
right.
Many, many Jewish people should be looking around and saying, Hashem, what are you trying to say to us? Okay?
Right.
What message are you, because everything comes from Hashem.
Yes.
And they should be saying to themselves, in speaking to God, Hashem, what message are you trying to give us right now? And I think he is sending some very powerful messages.
Yes. And it is a moment in time where there's different, so many different levels of political intrigue. But I just also want to share with you something, and I've been asking some rabbis in my place where I learn. There's a place that I specifically go to an early morning class, and then there's a place I specifically go to make my early morning prayers and my Shabbos prayers in Crown Heights. And I ask the following question. When the 10 plagues were brought down upon the nation of Egypt, even though the Jews, the Hebrew, the slaves, who were then freed through the agency of the first Redeemer of Israel, Moses, I'm sure that even though they understood that they were going to be liberated, they still had to have a certain level of fear because everyone around them was passing away. Not only were the Egyptians, but we lost, unfortunately, 4/5 of our people during the plague of darkness. So in that sense, I kind of feel like we're going through that type of period where, like, we're getting the human family experience is getting struck in so many different ways. We need the Torah, as it says, or there was Orim B'mosh Vosehim. There was light in their dwelling places. Those who are clinging on to Torah, those who are learning Torah, those who are talking about Torah, those who are advocating others to learn Torah, whether it be Jew or for the nations of the world, the B'nai Noach, to learn about their mitzvahs. You know, although I don't suppose to give any further clarity upon what you've mentioned, or I don't want to. It definitely has all the vapors of something very redemption-like on the pathway, especially when we see, like, you have two prominent Jewish names in American politics, Bernie Sanders and Michael Bloomberg, and the truth of the matter is, and even for that matter, Bibi Netanyahu, with all due respect to all three gentlemen, they are not the Mashiach. But I think that these three men have brought to the world a certain prominence to the idea of a Jew being a leader, but the type of Jewish leadership we need has to be a king of Israel who is a prophet, who is an extremely wise human being who can guide not only the Jewish people to the redemption, but also guide the nations towards redemption. So I think also there is that little equation I just want to throw in there to, you know, like another spice in the mix of our contemporary situation. Your comment on these matters.
Well, yeah. I mean, this is all leading towards the redemption, and the process is going to be very similar. It won't be exact, but the sages said that the process is going to be very similar to the first redemption, the redemption from Mitzrayim, which, if they had gotten to Sinai and not done the sin of the golden calf, okay, that would have been the final redemption as well. Okay,
right.
It could have been. And it will be this time because we're running out of time in terms of,
right,
of the calendar of 6,000 years and then the seventh millennium and what that represents on the eighth millennium, and it goes on to eternity. But the point is there's going to be a lot of similarities. You've already got plagues of locusts in the Arab countries around Israel, and it's not touching Israel.
Wow.
Okay? It's been in Egypt. It's been in Sudan. It's over now in Iran. I don't know if you've heard about that.
No, I didn't.
It's not touching Israel at all. So, I mean, that should be a clue, you know. But
right,
there's going to be a lot of similarities, and I don't know if it's going to last a year, like the sages wrote that, you know, all the 10 plagues in Egypt lasted 1 year by the time they were all done. I don't know if it'll be a year or if it'll take longer for this to play out, because this is a worldwide situation. Our people have to come home from the whole world, from all the countries in the world where they currently live, which includes the B'nai Nissim, by the way, which is why I'm so involved in that aspect.
Yes.
But the point is, there's going to be a lot of similarities, and we don't know exactly what. Now, the coronavirus is obvious. That's a plague, okay?
Yes.
It could end up being a pandemic. Now, it has to be declared to be a pandemic by the CDC, okay, or the WHO, the World Health Organization. But right now it's at least an epidemic, and
right,
it's spreading around. And a lot of this spreading, by the way, from what I've learned, and I've been reading a lot about this, when someone is diagnosed as having the coronavirus called COVID-19, they're put into quarantine. But what about what has been going on before they were diagnosed? Because a lot of people have it, and they are not symptomatic. In other words, you're not showing any symptoms of having this. So they're going about their daily lives, doing whatever it is they do normally, going to work, kids going to school, families, you know, getting together for meals. But somebody in that family might have contracted it, and now they're spreading it to the rest of the family, that's spreading it at work and at schools, and nobody even knows it yet because they're asymptomatic and they haven't been tested because they have no symptoms.
Right.
This is what people don't understand. So it could be anywhere. And what people should be doing about this, therefore, is when they leave the home, they go to work, the kids go to school, whatever it is they're doing outside the home, the very first thing when they come back home is to leave their shoes in a certain place, always, and they take their shoes off, and they immediately wash their hands with soap and warm water for about 20 seconds, or they use a hand sanitizer, an alco gel kind of thing like we use in the hospitals around the world, or whatever, and they need to be constantly, like every 2 or 3 days, washing surfaces in the home, the countertops and the door handles and all of that stuff that people touch all the time. They need to be washing those with some kind of disinfectant that will kill the germs. Could be bleach. It could be, I use hydrogen peroxide, which is, I think, 3%. Hydrogen peroxide, even 0.5% works, okay, so you can even dilute it. And those kinds of things, so that if somebody brings a germ in, it's killed immediately. And then the second thing is, if you're outside with other people, you have a handkerchief or you have something to have over your nose and mouth if you're near someone who sneezes or coughs, because not everyone covers their face.
Right.
Their nose and their mouth when they cough or sneeze. But I can cover my nose and mouth if I'm near somebody that sneezes, so I won't get any droplets, okay, on me. And then I don't have to wear an actual mask, although you can. But you know what? If a person wears a mask, it could be because they're sick and they don't want any droplets to get on somebody else. But it could be because they don't want to catch the germ, but the germ is not airborne. So people who are not sick with this, the reason why they wear a mask is to prevent them from touching their face.
Right.
So if you're on a train or a bus and you're holding on to something, okay, because you got to hold on a bus and on a train and all this stuff, you don't know who else has touched that surface.
That's right. Yeah.
And if you're getting a germ on your fingers, then you go and touch your face because we touch our faces a lot. It's just a habit we have. So wearing a mask outside is not so much because we're fearful we're going to catch the germ, but to remind us to not touch our face. But if we already know not to touch our face, then we can, you know, try to get out of that habit and not do it. So there are all kinds of things people can do and should be thinking more about doing to not get it to begin with, and taking responsibility for themselves. But the second thing, Dawn, is when people say the folks that are most at risk are the elderly, the young, the very young, and people who already have conditions, and they're not being clear enough. They're not being clear, straight, and direct. And here's what they're talking about. The immune system, the body's own immune system, will kill this virus if it's strong.
That's right.
So the reason why elderly people might be more at risk is because they might have other conditions, but also if they're not eating properly, if they're not sleeping properly, if they're not getting the proper exercise, if they're under stress. And the fifth thing is if they're not hydrating enough, they're not drinking enough water, because dehydration draws down the immune system and weakens it. Okay? So people need to be, and this is true for everybody, if you want to have a good, strong immune system, okay, that will kill the bug instead of the bug killing you, you need to eat the proper food, and I'll talk about that in a second. You need to get the proper rest, at least 7 or 8 hours a night. You need to de-stress, not be stressed out. You need to get the proper exercise, not sit all day. That's very, very unhealthy. Mm-hmm. And you need to hydrate. You need to drink a lot of liquids, okay? That's the way to build the immune system so that even if you do get the virus, the immune system will kill it. Now, there are five nutrients that a person needs every day in their diet to build the immune system and make it strong. Vitamin C, absolutely, vitamin C. Vitamin D, or get enough sunshine so the body will make vitamin D.
Yes.
Magnesium, and a lot of people are magnesium deficient to begin with, okay? The fourth one is zinc, and the fifth one is selenium. If they are eating the proper foods that are high in those five nutrients, and or if they're taking supplements of those five nutrients, they either won't get sick, or if they get the virus, they won't be symptomatic at all, and it'll just go away eventually. Or if they get the virus and they get sick and they have symptoms, it'll be very, very mild because the immune system will take care of it. Okay? Now, I've been on a rant about this for weeks because the government's not talking about it here in Israel. The government's not talking about all this stuff in the United States. No. Even the health professionals aren't talking about the immune system and how important it is to eat a proper diet, get the proper exercise and sleep, whatever, to build the immune system. They're not telling people what to do so that if they do get, if they do contract the virus, it won't be so bad, okay, and they'll have it for a few days, and then they'll be over it. People don't have to die from this virus. They're dying because the body shuts down because the immune system doesn't kill the bug, because the immune system is too weak. That's what's going on.
You've been reading my thoughts, Yafabati. In terms of the five foods or supplements that a person can take, I mean, I'm actually the other day I had a sudden cramp in my left calf, and there's a physician's assistant who's part of our prayer gathering during the week and on Shabbos, and he told me that I should go eat, you know, my potassium and magnesium levels could be lower. It could be extra low, which can cause that type of contraction of the muscle. And selenium, I know that Brazil nuts are a good source for selenium. And today's a sunny day here in Brooklyn. I hope to get out today and get a little sun. It's also, I know a psychiatrist in New York City who promotes the idea that sunlight, lack of sunlight, has a connection. He didn't say causation, but there is a connection between abundant sunlight, not to overdo it, and holding back the features or the symptoms of the experience of depression. So, you know, when a person's in a depressed state, I also want to mention I spoke to we have also an emergency room doctor who retired who comes to our Frankel Shul Sunday morning prayer session, and he has a Gemara class. And he mentioned to me that on Friday I had a conference for fellow supervisors like myself with the director of our program in the social service organization, the CDC yet did not list hydrogen peroxide as a potent means of you know, cleansing and disinfecting the hands. But this doctor said you could use it. He also suggested, because Purell has been flying out of the stores, it's very hard to get Purell now, the antibacterial solution. He suggested using rubbing alcohol in order to get the consistency of Purell, to mixing it with aloe vera jelly or gel. So
yes,
a person can
absolutely you can
do
that.
Mix the two together.
Right, you can get 70% isopropyl alcohol and mix it with a gel. And you do the same thing as the product called Alco Gel, okay, as a hand sanitizer. But I don't use the hydrogen peroxide for my hands. I use it for surfaces, to clean surfaces.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Okay.
I mean, it's also very good for brushing the teeth with.
Yeah. And the other thing is just plain soap and water, as long as the water is warm.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the thing, Don, the other part of this whole business. And that is, when the warm weather comes, the virus will be killed. Okay, it lives in the cold, but it doesn't live very well in the warm weather. Okay.
Interesting.
But it might come back next year with a passion. Okay?
Right.
With a vengeance. So what people need to think about is not just this year. Next year, if it comes back with a vengeance, that's when we might have a run on the stores for food and for
right.
other essentials. And the best thing people can do is to prepare for next year. Once we get past this period of time, these next few months, okay, with not getting the virus, or if you get it, hopefully, you know, it's not so bad, it's kind of mild. But we'll have about 6 months, 8 months, 9 months, whatever, before the weather gets cold again and the virus will be back, okay, for people to prepare for it to be worse next year than it is right now. And that's my concern, is for next year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have an article that was sent to me because I subscribe to a lot of health and wellness newsletters and websites and whatever, and I'm getting news and information all the time from those places because I subscribe. I have
mm-hmm.
a really nice, very concise article about those five mm-hmm. nutrients and the foods that have the most of that nutrient in it, whether it be selenium or magnesium. By the way, Pincus and I also occasionally would get cramps in the muscles in our legs. And ever
mm-hmm.
since we've been taking magnesium as a supplement, we don't get that anymore. Okay, because
mm-hmm.
that is one of the symptoms of magnesium deficiency. But
mm-hmm.
some people are vitamin D deficient. Other people are deficient in other nutrients. Okay, vitamin D deficiency can also cause problems for the heart, cardiac problems and vein problems and all this. Vitamin D is very, very important. So
mm-hmm.
the thing is, if people want to write to me on email, and I'll give the email address again, I'll send them this very nice, very concise article that talks about those five nutrients and the food groups or foods that have the most of that nutrient in it, whether it's zinc or selenium or magnesium or vitamin C or whatever. If they don't know, if they're not sure, okay? And they can check against that food list and see if they're eating enough of those kinds of foods so they're getting enough of that nutrient. Then if they're not doing that, they can take it also by supplement form. The best thing would be to get it from food because that has a different absorption level than from a supplement. But the best case of all is to do both. Okay, have a good,
right.
good strong diet with the proper nutrients that we need, no sugar, okay, no gluten, to be honest with you, because those are inflammatory,
right.
and inflammation,
right.
chronic, systemic, low-grade inflammation also brings down the immune system, okay?
Yes.
But
yes.
anyway, if they write to me on email, I'll send them that article. It's just one article. I won't send them a whole lot. And my
right.
email address, again, is yaffbacha, Y-A-F-F, F like Francis, B-A-T-Y-A, so it's yaffbacha at yahoo.com. We can say that email address again, and I'm sure you'll have it on your website, Don, but people
yes.
can write to me, and I'll send them that article about those five nutrients.
Beautiful. I just two things I just want to mention. Number one, I heard that also that ginger, raw ginger, fresh ginger, is also good for strengthening the immune system. And number two, I just have to say this as a caveat, Yafabatia, for the people listening live and eventually the archive version, you know, neither Yafabatia or I are doctors. We're not writing prescriptions. We are saying these is what, these, you know, she's done the research. I've heard about these things. I've done research in matters unrelated to combating the coronavirus or just to strengthen the immune system. So we are offering information for you, blessed soul listeners, to look into it, do your research, speak to your nutritionists, your dietitians, your doctors, your homeopathic, your integrational medical staff. But there's a lot of wisdom behind what Yafabatia had mentioned. Have you heard anything about ginger, Yafabatia, in terms of helping the immune system?
Yes. Raw ginger is very good. You grate it. Okay, raw garlic
yeah.
is good. Raw garlic is good for helping somebody who has hypertension, high
mm-hmm.
blood pressure. Okay,
yes.
but it also has antiviral properties. Now, this whole thing is a virus. It's a
right.
viral infection. Another thing that's very good for viral infection and bacterial as well is oregano oil. It's extremely strong.
Yes.
Okay. But oregano leaf, and then they make it into an oil because it's an extract from the oregano leaf. And it comes in a gel cap, a capsule where the liquid is inside. Okay?
Yes.
So you swallow it and it gets digested in the stomach. It even smells very strong. If you put those capsules, those gel caps, to your nose, you can smell the oregano very, very, very strong. And when I make my pasta sauce, I put oregano oil in it, not the oregano leaf, but actual oil, because it's very pungent, very, very strong. My husband loves my pasta sauce because it has that strong oregano flavor. But the oregano oil is also both antiviral and antibacterial.
Yes.
Now, a cold is a bacterial infection, and there are other bacterium that a person can pick up which will be helped by an antibiotic. But a viral infection is not helped by antibiotics. So it's got nothing to do with bacteria. It's viral, which is different. So in that case, if someone comes down with this, they can use oregano oil also to fight the virus. Very, very strong.
Yes. Swati, I'd like to segue to a little. This is a teaching from 79 years ago. It was at a Purim meal that was delivered by the Sixth Lubavitcher Rebbe. Give us a little historical background. And basically, as well, there's advice for the nation of Israel how we can avert evil decrees. So it goes something like this. About 2,388 years ago, during the Babylonian exile, the Jewish people were dispersed into many lands, including those ruled by Ahasuerus, of course, was the king of Persia. Over 50 years passed since the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, since the Jewish people had been torn away from their sacred home, where they used to see the miracles of the Beis HaMikdash, the Holy Temple, and hear the words of the prophets. Now, however, they were scattered far and wide, both in lands where they were mistreated and in lands where they were well-treated, because their qualities and skills were recognized as being of benefit. Sounds like a modern story. Besides being fickle by nature, Ahasuerus, the king of Persia, was also arrogant, wise in his own eyes, and easy to anger. He was a mixture of good and evil, wisdom and foolishness. We see in the conflicting opinions of our sages in the Tractate of Megillah, which is the oral tradition of the discussing all the matters of Purim, was whether he was a wise king or a foolish king. During the reign of his father Darius, and during the beginning of his own reign as well, the Jews throughout his provinces were profitably employed. As time went on, for reasons arising out of commerce and business friendships, they severed their connections with their life of Torah and mitzvahs and slipped into a worldly, luxury-seeking lifestyle. The Shabbos became more like a work day. The observance of kosher diet was taken too lightly. The period of family life became coarsened. Forgetting that they were the chosen people, the Jews of the period began to make light of the fact that God had chosen us from among all nations and raised us above all tongues, and began to live a free and easy life like that of any other nation. Comes along Mordechai Yehudi and the prophet Malachi, and repeatedly warned their contemporaries that God does not tolerate such a lifestyle, that he would punish them severely for it. They pointed out that if God's fury were vented on them and their families, fraternizing with their B'nai Noach cronies would not help them out, nor would their affluence. Moreover, they drew their attention to the passages in the Torah that record God's words of rebuke. The people's hearts, however, having waxed fat and dissolute, unfortunately blocked their hearing. Thus it was that even though Mordechai was one of the most distinguished figures in the royal palace, his admonitions regarding the observance of the Torah and his commandments were of no avail. While Ahasuerus successfully engaged in battle on a number of fronts, his Jewish subjects participated energetically and profitably in the war effort, which earned them awards of gratitude and prominent positions in the administration. In addition, one of the individuals who Ahasuerus admitted to his royal council was a person of lowly lineage, a barber in the public bathhouse by the name of Haman, the son of Hamdasa. Through ambition, arrogance, and guile, he found himself a place among the ranks of the king's advisors. When Ahasuerus returned victorious from the battlefront, he arranged huge banquets for all his subjects. His Jewish subjects were also invited by the council that the king had appointed to see that every guest be supplied whatever food and drink his heart desired. These utterly trefa banquets with the unbridled debauchery that accompanied them brought increasing decadence upon the Jews. Hence, though the time of the redemption was at hand, as the prophets had foretold, they wanted to hear nothing of it, laughing it off with insolent mockery. They were intoxicated by their wartime earnings, by their royal letters of appreciation. They had the grandest mansions. They grew fond of their undisciplined life, without Shabbos, without keeping kosher, without the mikveh, without tefillin, and so on, and rather enjoyed their generous helpings of earthly, fleshly living. Any word of rebuke was shamelessly rejected. It was an era in which the judges were in trial. Self-assured by their prosperity, the rich addressed their observant brethren and the sages in disrespectful and even disparaging language. 5 years passed from the dark day in which Ahasuerus had put his wife Vashti to death. In the meantime, Esther had been made queen, and in accordance with Mordechai's directive, no one knew her ancestry or nationality. In the course of those 5 years, a number, perhaps the majority of the Jews, lived there, and happily in the kingdom, enjoyed their luxuries unrestrained in the slightest by the Torah and its commandments. They desecrated the Shabbos and the festivals. They ate meat that was not kosher, and they lived as any other nation, and they profaned authentic Jewish morality. Despite his manifold duties as one of the most eminent Jewish personalities of the capital city of 127 provinces, despite his consequent contacts with the Torah communities of all the lands of diaspora as well as the land of Israel, and despite his high office in the royal palace, what was Mordechai devoted to? At all times, to Jewish education. As a leader, he recognized that this was the very foundation of Judaic lifestyle. Realizing, moreover, that learning had to be transmitted through pious teachers, he chose such people to staff the Torah schools that he established, men who were able to focus all their energy on implanting in their pupils a belief in the Creator, a love for the Torah, and a spirit of sacrifice for Jewish values. While the wealthy folk of his day were engaged in their assimilatory concerns, Mordechai and his staff of teachers raised a large number of Jews who studied the Torah and observed the commandments, and they in turn brought up their children likewise. However, in the course of the 10 years in which Haman found his way into the ranks of becoming an official member of the king's entourage, he managed through trickery, opportunism, and the intervention of Satan to smuggle himself into the innermost of royal circles and to rise to positions of prominence. He was helped chiefly by his riches, for he used treasures that he had found to support the administration. His investments on behalf of the government rose in value. In addition, on account of his humble beginnings, honor was of the greatest importance to him. The king accordingly appointed him to the highest of his ministers and decreed that all citizens, including his colleagues, were to bow and kneel to him. This at last satisfied the arrogance of this vile minister. So, as I read that Yafabat, I'm thinking, again, it sounds awfully contemporary to me. There are some people who have risen to the level of arrogance, and one of the things that Bibi Netanyahu mentioned several years back is to remind the Iranian, who are really the Persian people, that, you know, Jewish people used to be in loyal service to the kingdom of Persia. But it seems that the current government seems to have does not know or doesn't want to acknowledge that history, but rather they look at us as like the great pariah, or along with the United States, and yet now their hatred doesn't seem to be bringing them good outcomes. Your take on these matters?
Well, the thing I love about the Purim story, okay, is, first of all, the fact that the holiday is called Purim, which right. is the word for lots, because Haman decided on the date of when he was going to destroy the Jewish people by casting
right.
lots.
Right.
Okay? In other words, by chance, he just threw
right.
the dice, and whatever came up was going to be the date,
right.
the year and the month or the day, whatever. And so one might think, well, the story called Purim is about chance, things happening by chance. But
right.
really, the turnaround, or what Hashem did with it, was to provide all of these so-called coincidences, okay? And there are so many coincidences. Vashti not coming to the party of the king when he commanded her. He gets rid of her. Then he has a contest of young girls. Then he chooses Esther, who's a Jew. What a coincidence that was.
Yeah.
You know, it goes on and on and on with all these so-called coincidences. And so the thing I love about Purim, if people wear a mask, is that the reality of who they are is hidden behind the mask, whatever the mask
right.
is, Lone Ranger
right.
mask or, you know, whatever kind of mask, you know. And what happened with the story of Purim is Hashem was hiding behind the coincidences. So as you and I know, Don, and many other Jewish people know, there is no such thing as coincidence.
No.
It's all from Hashem. But that's the
yes.
way the story goes, because the way you read the story, and Hashem is not mentioned at all, in none of the Megillah does
that's
it
right.
mention God or Hashem.
That's
so
right.
it's just a wonderful, wonderful way of pointing out that Hashem is behind everything. Hashem is behind this coronavirus. Hashem
yes.
is behind the movement of the B'nai Anasim coming back after 5 centuries of
yes.
being separated from the rest of the Jewish people. These are the exiles who were exiled from the other exiles, and they're coming back. So there are so many things that are going on, and one might say, oh, what a coincidence that is, or what a coincidence. There's no such thing. It's Hashem that's putting things together at that moment, whatever that is going on that someone wants to think is a coincidence. It's Hashem that's behind it for his reasons, for his purposes. And that's what I love about the Purim story, okay, is because it looks very drab and dreary and dark, you know, and there's this decree that these people
right.
are going to be annihilated, and it gets turned around in their favor.
Yes.
Also by chance, some might say. By chance. So that's the whole thing about Purim. That's why the kids dress up in costumes. That's not who they really are.
Right.
You know. And it's a great way of teaching the children, okay, that Hashem hides behind coincidence. And when we think something is coincidental, it's really Hashem.
True. True.
It's just a beautiful way of pointing that out.
Another point that you know, we talked about, we shared ideas, primarily you did, and I just threw in a couple of points about, you know, strengthening the immune system and staying healthy. One of the things that also is connected to overall wellness is trying to live with a mindset which is joyous and appreciative and acknowledging the blessings we have as human beings. No matter if we are the head of a Fortune 500 company or we're living paycheck to paycheck. And I want to share with you, Yaffa Bhatia, and the rest of the world, a teaching from the Talmudic Tractate of Shabbos. Is the 30th page, the second side. And also it's a story from the Book of Kings, in the first Book of Kings, in the third chapter, that our sages have warned us that Shekhinah, divine presence, cannot rest on those who are sad, downhearted, or lightheaded. The Shekhinah, the divine presence, rests where the joy of a mitzvah, of doing a commandment, is present. An example of this is when we saw that Elisha Navi, Elisha the prophet, who was the number one student of Elijah the prophet, became angry with the king of Israel, one of the kings that led the 10 tribes of Israel in rebellion against the tribe of Judah and Benjamin and Levi. And Elisha Navi became angry at Yehoram Melech Yisrael for his wicked ways. And even though he was justified in being angry at him for his wicked ways, the fact that he became angry, the spirit of prophecy left him and returned only after music was played before him, which is also a very important component of Purim. And say, like during, you know, the time of Sukkot, when we're out dancing, the Simchus Beis HaShoeva, as a commemoration of what we used to do in the Holy Temple, Yaffa Bhatia, is joy is a catalyst for bringing Shekhinah. And there's no way, shape, or form that a person who makes himself, or a woman makes herself a vessel for Shekhinah, they shouldn't accept infirmity. They should actually expect to go from strength to strength. Your take on these matters.
Well, the thing is, it's very, very important, okay, for people to understand that gratitude to anyone, but especially to Hashem, is not only important mentally and emotionally, but also physical health, because the body as a whole, everything interacts with and affects everything else. So the digestive system plays a part, and so we need to be conscious and purposeful in making sure that we're promoting good bacteria in the gut, is what it's called. But emotional health and psychological health is also important, because that affects the immune system as well. And gratitude and joy, as instead of the opposites, of course, which would be being downhearted and disappointed and resentful and angry, as opposed to gratitude, and the sadness and the disappointment and all the other stuff instead of joy. So when we look at those opposites, we see that the negative emotions and thoughts that go in our heads actually bring down the immune system and cause us to be unhealthy, whereas the positive emotions, the joy, the gratitude, the feeling good about life and friends and family and Hashem and everything, and doing the mitzvahs with joy. As a matter of fact, when we do something that we're commanded to do, and if we don't do it with joy, we're not even doing the mitzvah. The joy has to be a component of what we do in fulfilling a commandment. It has to include joy, or it's not really a mitzvah. You know, it's doing something because we feel obligated or because we think we have to, whatever. But it's not really a mitzvah in the sense of the intentionality behind it. Well, the thing is that joy is very healthy. That gratitude that we feel when someone or Hashem gives us something and blesses us with something, that sense of gratitude is so, so healthy physically, on the physical level, along with the emotional level, the psychological level. So it all works together, because the whole body is synergistic, and every aspect of the human body interacts with and affects every other aspect of the body, the human body, the human person.
Beautiful. I'd like to end off, and of course then I'll give you the final statement for today's program, so after, you know, before I just make my official sign-off, is that one of the most important components of the Festival of Purim, which will be taking place tomorrow evening, wow, this year has really been flying, is the idea of something called Shalach Monot and Matanot Levyonim, sending presents of food and giving gifts to the poor. Now, I know a lot of people might have trepidations because of the fact that we have this plague that's, again, time will tell, Hashem will show us how much more serious it is, and hopefully Hashem will, through divine intervention and people returning to Hashem, that the thing will just go poof and be gone from our midst. But this idea of, in the 142nd chapter of the condensed version of Jewish law, on Purim, we the Jewish people are obligated to send to another person two portions of food of Purim. Of course, everyone should take universal precautions. And this requirement is derived from Esther chapter 9, verse 22, which mentions sending portions of food from a person to his friend or to her friend. A man usually gives to a man, and a woman gives to a woman. And a person who sends portions of food to many friends is considered praiseworthy. Nevertheless, the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch brings out, it is preferable to be more generous in giving gifts to the poor than indulging in the Feast of Purim and sending portions of food to friends. For there is no greater, more attractive rejoicing before the Holy One, blessed be He, than to make happy the hearts of the poor, the orphans, and the widows. And I'd like to add the B'nai Anusim. A person who grants joy to the hearts of the unfortunate individuals resembles the divine presence, which the prophet Isaiah mentions in chapter 57, verse 16, as enlivening those with lowly spirits and invigorating those with broken hearts. Blessed souls, we have this wonderful opportunity to experience it, not just as a theological or philosophical outlook of being happy, but to take action and do and perform acts of kindness by giving gifts to the poor. And the B'nai Anusim, I don't want to call them poor, but they are in need, of being gifting. And Yafa Batya's organization, Ezra Lanusim, Amuta, is a prime vessel for raising up the spirits of those who have been crushed for five centuries. This way, at this point, I'm going to segue to Yafa Batya to make her final statement, and then we'll segue out of today's program. Yafa Batya.
Well, I just wanted to remind people of the email address where they can reach me if they'd like, you know, more information about those nutrients, the foods that have
Beautiful.
High quantities of those nutrients. They can write me about that. My email address is yaffbatya@yahoo.com, and you're going to have that on your website, right, Don? Also?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And just to say, yes, we need a lot of help and support for raising money for all these communities of banana seam that we're trying to help all over the world, not just the ones that I mentioned. By the way, we have a new U.S. Nonprofit organization also, sister organization in the U.S. now called Friends of Banana Seam. So now we have, there's two of us now. You're going to be starting to see double, Don. Anyway, we do need a lot of help and support if you're able. Otherwise, if you're not able, your prayers are always, always appreciated for the Banana Seam. And thank you very much. Have a wonderful, healthy, and happy, and joyful Purim Sameach to all of our listeners. And thank you again very, very much, Don, for having me on your show. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure and honor, Yaffa Bhatia, and we're going to segue out of today's program by reminding everyone that we are an anti-eugenics radio broadcast. That sometimes we're on once a week, twice a week, three times a week. Hopefully we'll get back up to four or five times with mini presentations. Humble efforts, but on a monthly basis, I like to connect with Yaffa Bhatia because I do think that her organization is connected with the ingathering of the exiles. It is part of the universal redemption for the nation of Israel and ultimately for the nations as well. And so therefore, I'd like to sign off today's program in the spirit of Purim, which is a taste of redemption, with a song called Yorechacha, You May Be Blessed, Mitzion, You May Be Blessed from Zion. This is a song that was performed by Eitan Masori. And before I do that, I just want to remind everyone that may all our efforts be performed in a way of Ahava Chad, one love, Gorla Chad, one destiny, Kolana follows, but Darchinom Darkishom, a pleasant, peaceful way. And I want to remind everyone, but I'll remind myself first, I've got to be good, Yaffa Bhatia's got to be good, we've all got to be good, because Atteva Tov Lehetiv, it's the nature of the good to do good, the Creator is the source of our goodness, waits ever so patiently for to activate that which is not a dream, that is our Tzelem Elokim, our one image, help us get out in scrimmage. And another, in addition to my traditional segues, is now that I want to mention this Hebrew mnemonic Avgad, which stands for Ah, Ahava, love, is base, bracha, as opposed to Gimel, Gaiva, arrogance, is Dalut, Dalus, or Dalut, or poverty. Let's go for the first half of that mnemonic, blessed souls. Love is blessing. Love should be the blessing that brings the healing to the world through acts of kindness, thoughts of kindness, words of kindness. You may be blessed from Zion. Take care, everyone, and a Freilich in Purim.
Yami, oto karata, Oh, Davinu, 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 Oh, Davinu,